Fighters, today I am excited to have my buddy Spencer Powell join me today. He is the man, the myth, the legend behind Builder Funnel. He's going to share a little bit what that is for you if you don't know what that is, but I've known Spencer for quite a while, and he's helping remodelers, GCs all across the country build stronger businesses through the marketing that they do. And I'm excited to have him and his team part of our Mile High Profit Summit this year. Spencer, welcome to the show, man. I appreciate you. First, I want to thank you for making the decision to come and be part of it as one of our sponsors this year, man. We can't do this stuff without you guys, and I appreciate it. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Always enjoy chatting with you, Tom. And yeah, we're excited to be a part of the summit and the big event this year. Yeah, I know you guys put a lot of heart and energy into those. And so I'm excited to see it in person this time around.
Yeah, I've gone to a ton of events through my career. And then when I started putting them on, my respect for what it takes to put them on went through the roof, man.
Cause they're a lot of work, man. We're glad to be participating, but not hosting.
So. Not hosting. That's right. Yeah. It's all these things you don't think of, which is why you got to have a great team. And I'm blessed to have a great team because they tell me to do stuff like this and then just show up and do what I do on the stage there. So, but anyway, man, what's Builder Funnel? What do you do? How long you been doing it? How do you help people? Let's hear it.
Yeah, cool. I mean, the skinny is been doing it 13 years and we do strategic marketing for remodelers and custom builders. And really, I would say the premise of like how we evolved early on was when I first started doing marketing, I got involved with my family business. They've been doing this 110 years out in the Seattle market and lots of different spectrums across, you know, property management, spec homes, then it was remodeling custom homes, handyman, you name it. But as I got involved in the marketing, like I started doing like blogging and social media because that was kind of like what it was in 2010, 11, 12. And I was like, I know these are the right things, but how do I know if it's working? And so very quickly, we made sure that we always had the tracking in place to tie it back to dollars. And so that's something that we are really passionate about. And what we do is we try to tie everything we can possibly back to dollars, because in my book, it's marketing and sales is the revenue team. And so we're a big part of that with the marketing. We have to do our part. Then sales has to close it up. But at the end of the day, we're all working towards the same thing, which is sales.
Yeah. I would say you're more than passionate about the tracking because I've known you for a while. I think you're fanatical about it. And I think that's good. It was always one of my biggest complaints with our painting business with the marketing companies that I used is they would just send some PDF report of what Google said that month, right?
Yeah.
And not really a deep dive of what our next plan of attack was and, you know, what's working, what's not working. And what's the old saying? I know 50% of my marketing works. I just don't know which 50%.
And so just keep spending it all.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question that is totally out of left field here, but I think it'll help some people. You got contractors out here that are working with firms like yours. Mm-hmm. How do I word this? I'm trying to be nice and not towards you, just in general. I'm just trying to be nice here. What pisses you off about when you work with contractors and their marketing? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, while you think on that, I'll share like as a coach, right? I could give the best coaching on the planet, but if you don't implement it, take a golf coach, a tennis coach, a football coach. Like, this is the first step you have to take. This is how you have to put your feet, you know, and then if the player doesn't go execute. So one of my biggest things when I do sales calls and our team does sales calls with people that are inquiring about our services and things like that, we really count the cost. Like, are you fucking coachable or not? You know, because if you're not, then don't do this. And so that's kind of one of those hot buttons for me. As you could tell, I get amped up when I talk about it because we're going to bust our ass and bring the best we can to help you win, but you got to do the work. So I'm just curious, what's a hot button for you or something that annoys you?
Oh man, there's a couple. One is actually, and it's kind of partially directed at the remodeler, the contractor, and partially at the other company that they're working with, but it's in that SEO company bucket, or like you said, you get these like Google reports. But what really pisses me off is that one, those companies are hired and continue to stay on because here's an example. Talk to a company. Hey, what are you doing for SEO? Great. We've been using this company for 2 years. I go, awesome. Glad you're working on your SEO. What are they doing for you? Well, I don't know, some keyword stuff. Or they send me a monthly report, blah, blah, blah. Some impressions, some clicks, like we're showing up more for the... Okay. So that's what makes me mad. Like one, the SEO company, they're probably not doing anything at this point. And if they are, like who knows, right? The company doesn't know. The remodeling company doesn't know. But then from the remodeler standpoint, I'm going, how is this good enough? Or what are you tying this back to? Why are you investing in this service if we haven't tied it back to revenue? And so I think it ties into what we started with, which is not tracking your marketing to a revenue number. Like I mean,
per source and all that, right?
Per source. Yes. Yeah. So if you do a home show, track the leads from the home show, tie any projects to that and go, okay, we spent, you know, 10 grand at the home show and 50 hours of team time and we got X dollars back. Was that worth it? Like, do we want to do it next year? Yes or no? And if you just do that, even at a very basic level, like, okay, we have our internet sources. We have Google organic. We have Google paid ads. We have social organic. We have social paid ads. We have referral sites. Like you can break it down into 6, 7, 8 channels and then you track the leads and then you track the sales from those channels. Like, does this take effort? Yes. But once you have the numbers, you'll look at those 8 channels and go, man, 4 of these channels, I love my cost per acquisition and 4 of them, I don't. Maybe I should reallocate that budget and double down on the 4 channels that I really like and try that next year.
Yeah.
Like that's simple, right? Is it take effort and energy to set it up and track it? Yes. But imagine how much more effective even the same marketing budget would be going into the next year.
Yeah. You mentioned home show. There was a home show outside of Chicago we used to do. And because we tracked our leads, what we learned from home shows is very few people rarely bought shortly after the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of one client in particular that I had a conversation with at the booth, 10, 15 minutes, and they were out of my life. And then a year later, they reached out and they're like, hey, we met you last year at such and such show. And I went out, I sold a $28,000 project to him. However, then that was a one-time project. That was for their whole interior remodel that we repainted. Well, then later that summer, I think it was that summer, they had me back. We did their deck. And then like the next year, a year and a half, we did their full exterior. And then what we didn't know is he owned several businesses. And then we were in the door when those places, and this is well over a 6-figure lifetime value over the course of 3, 4 years, 5 years with this one client because of this home show. So did the home show work? And that was just one, right? Where I think you got to look at the whole picture. And if you're not tracking your leads in a CRM, a spreadsheet, whatever you're going to use, you're doing yourself a disservice because you can shut something off prematurely. You know, because some things, this is one of the things about marketing that annoys me, and it's just a reality, annoys me myself as a business owner. I get caught up in this sometimes too. Like we think we spend a dollar or we invest some of our time into marketing, we should get something out of the machine, like a vending machine, right? Mm-hmm. And so much of marketing is experimentation. It's tweaking. It's being consistent. You know, there's a reason why, I think we've had this conversation before, like Tide runs commercials, you know, till this day, no matter what they're selling, there's Tide commercials and there's Progressive insurance commercials. And because it's over and over and over, you know, they've got to be top of mind. And so many contractors haven't escaped, even if they have a multi-million dollar business, a lot of them haven't escaped that tradesperson mentality and gone to the true business owner mentality of, no, this is just part of the journey of growing my business.
Yeah. And so you got into like customer lifetime value. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's like a level deeper, right? And so when you look at that home show, you're kind of now making this evaluation of, okay, I go to this and I sell one project out of it. But then maybe 6 months later, you get 2 more projects. And then a year later, to your point, you get this one. But then that one customer does like 4 projects over the next 4 years. If you can track your average lifetime value of a client, which maybe for that client, it was 100 grand, but maybe for a lot of clients, it's 20 grand, some it's 50. So your average is like, whatever, 35, 40. Mm-hmm. If you, that's where you can use averages in these situations. You go, well, I did this home show and I only closed 3 clients for, let's say they're a really small project, 20 grand total. But you know, my average lifetime value of a client is 40 grand. So you know, this will lead to stuff in the future. Then it becomes this evaluation of cash. Like, because if you did a home show for 10 grand, you know you're going to get paid 100 grand, but it's going to take 3 years to get that back. Mm-hmm. Like, would you stack up as many home shows as you could and do this as fast as you could, only to the point that you can invest that cash and then wait to get it back?
Right.
And this is where you get like way in the weeds on that stuff, but it depends on like how fast you want to grow and everything. So if you always want to be like immediate cash positive on your marketing, then you're going to look at that shorter time horizon. But to your point, like if you take this zoom out as the business owner and go, well, if I know a channel is working, it just takes a little longer to get my cash back. I just need to factor that into how I'm making my decisions.
Yeah. And you put that in your budget and then you forecast it out and you know, it's coming. It's, I mean, we put X amount of thousands a month into our 401ks and all those different things for certain returns. And this is really no different. It's an investment. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard when you're not seeing the returns right away from your marketing. And I think that's also a product of not having a clear marketing strategy that's hitting different elements, right? Because the other thing about lifetime value that we didn't talk about, that 100 grand was just off this one guy. He would refer us to other people and they would mm-hmm. refer you. I would love to see some sort of app where you plug in Bill Johnson, I sold this job, and then, you know, Tom Reber is his buddy and you referred. Could you imagine like the web through the years? Because I bet I could go back to my painting company. Had this thing existed, I could probably trace every dollar of revenue that we had in our company, because 80% of our revenue was not like paid ads and, you know, things like that, right? It was referrals. It was repeat business. It was influencer relationships and repeat business and those types of things. It would probably trace back to probably 4 or 5 of those first customers that we took care of really well, you know?
So here's the exciting part for those of you listening. If your business is like Tom's was, where 80% of it is referral and word of mouth, if you push on the marketing lever and you have to spend a lot more than you want, right? Like in quotes, but like, because you probably aren't spending much or enough on marketing, and you start landing customers through marketing, all of those people are new people that can now go refer. And if you have 80% of your business on referrals, you probably do such a good job that you earn referrals. And so you are just going to fuel that referral engine. But the reason you grow a lot slower on referrals is it just takes time to build up. Mm-hmm. One person tells 2, and then you do 2, and then 2 tell a few more. But that just evolves over these decades. But if you pour some marketing on there, you'll have that many more people referring.
Well, this is also why if you have a goal to grow your business, you can't rely just on word of mouth, because it's not predictable and it takes so much time, right? So you have to have some other elements in play, content, paid ads, whatever it might be, you know, networking groups, all those different things.
Fighters, I want to invite you to go to milehighprofitsummit.com and check out the lineup we have for you at Mile High Profit Summit this year in Denver, Colorado. I'm super excited because not only are we bringing you the theme of Sell Unafraid, we're also unlocking breakout sessions for the first time. We're going to dig into the numbers. We're going to dig into attracting higher quality leads. We're going to dig in how to sell using simple tools that are out there for you so that you can walk home with higher profits and a better quality of life. Go to milehighprofitsummit.com and come join us and hang out. And let's get real this year and change your life, change your business. I'm out.
So you talked on most people probably aren't spending enough on marketing. Before the real age of the internet and social and those types of things, there was a rule of thumb that if you want to be aggressive and grow in your business, spend around 10% or so of your revenue. Has that changed? What do you think? Where should that be?
Yeah, I think it's different. I see it different in the contracting space versus, like, I'll say, like larger scale remodels. Mm-hmm. I feel like contracting space, I do see that like 8 to 12%. And then more remodels is like 2 to 5%. But again, for me, it always comes back to it somewhat depends on your margins. And to answer another question, tie another question you asked earlier into this one, one of the things that frustrates me as a marketer, you said, like, what really gets you mad is when I go to somebody and they say, well, we do kitchens and baths and decks, and we do the occasional outdoor thing, and we do the, you know, this, and you're going, well, what are we going to market? Like all of this, or are we just going to market one thing? And so if you're looking at what you're spending, if you are very specialized, super high margin, you can spend more. But if you're a generalist and you have thin margins and you're competing on price and you don't really have a lot that makes you unique and different, which is like, i.e., I do 10 things and I'm kind of okay at all 10, then you aren't going to be able to charge a lot, and you're not going to have much room for marketing. So like all these things start to tie together the deeper you dive into them. But as a marketer, if you think about like, would you rather market an amazing product or service or like a junky one or just like an average one? And is it going to be easier or harder?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can spend more aggressively if you have high margins, and then you're just going to grow a lot faster because you'll get your cash back quicker.
Yeah. One of the things that we coach people on that are more generalists is if you're tracking leads, if you're job costing, you know what your most profitable projects are that require the least amount of friction in your life, put the money and time into those things. And then all that other stuff just comes because it's just going to come, right? And then you can cherry pick them. Yeah. No, that's awesome. So we touched on the online thing here a little bit. And obviously it's 2023, last I checked.
Pretty sure.
You remember one of those days, you're like, what year is it? Anyway, and I really hope everyone's got a website, right? Because I think if you don't, you're probably not a real business, all right? I mean, it's just the way it is, right? But some people are having great success converting on their websites, others are not. How do you know if you have a high-performing website? What are some do's, don'ts, signs that you do or you don't? Talk on that a bit as we bring this home here today.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the ultimate measure of it is it driving dollars? And so you would want to be able to track back projects landed from your website. At the end of the day, it should be driving lead flow, right? And so it should be pulling in your target audience as best you can, and then capturing and converting that target audience into a lead. So that's a phone call, a form submission, an email from the site, you know, some sort of they raise their hand, right? And they're interested in some fashion. And then out of those leads, you're starting sales conversations and closing deals. And there's going to be some lag time from that, but you should be able to track that back. And so when you think about things like Google Ads and social media and all this Yelp and blah, 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 like all of those things generally lead back to the website. And so you can track all the sources, but the website, once they land there, you want to make sure that all those sources are you're getting a lot of traffic, but from that traffic is not just like, oh, I'm getting traffic from all over the country. Like it's local, it's targeted, it's the types of buyers that you want to work with. And then they're raising their hand and, you know, filling out a form, taking some action.
All right. Let's say somebody gets their Google PDF of their web traffic and they got high traffic. And let's define high traffic. What's high traffic for, like, we're in Colorado Springs, right? If I'm a GC remodeler, I'm a kitchen remodeler in Colorado Springs. What's high traffic? Let's start with that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're a local business, probably in the low to mid thousands per month, it's pretty rock solid. That would be high. Okay. You know, can you get more? Sure. But
so if I'm getting 1,000 or so visits to my site a month, but not a whole lot of lead form submissions, what might the problem be?
Yeah, it's probably one of two things. One is the quality and the way those people are getting there, there's a mismatch. They're looking for something else. They land there and they're like, I'm in the wrong spot. So they're leaving. So that would be one kind of bucket there, is evaluating the quality of the traffic. If it's coming in and it's not a good fit, they're going to leave. And then the next one, I'll kind of split it into two parts. One is, let's say it is the right person, but we're not speaking to that person the right way. So that's going to be more alignment on like brand and messaging and what you're offering and what they're looking for. Good example would be maybe you do custom homes and somebody comes to the site and they've got a $2 million budget and they click on your portfolio and they see a bunch of blurry photos. Great buyer mismatch on what they're looking for. You might be, actually only do $2 million homes, but if your photos don't represent that, they're out of there. Boom. So yeah, that's like one part of that bucket. And then the other part of that bucket is just general conversion best practices. So somebody does a search, they land on your blog, they get some good information, and then there's like no next step. There's no call to action, no download this, no schedule a consultation. Like there's nothing for them to do. They're like, they might browse around or they might just leave. And so you need to get the right people there. Once they're there, you want to have alignment in who they are and what you do, and that should match up. And then you want to have lots of ways to capture and convert them, whether that's a download, a consult, a chat, a phone number, you know, all the different ways.
So if you're not, let me sum this up, see if I'm right here. If you're not getting leads through your website consistently, it's either a traffic issue, right? Or a conversion issue. It ain't getting found, or if it's getting found and the content and all those other things that you touched on briefly get you found, but then you get there and there's blurry pictures, the page loads quickly or slowly, there's no clear call to action. It's not, what do you call it, a responsive website that changes with the screen that you're looking at, all these different things that are like 20 years ago, right?
Yep.
So, which gets into design. I worked with a designer early on who, and of course he was biased and he's a good dude. I love the guy. In fact, he created all of our brand identity for the contractor fight. He's really solid. He would tell you that design is the most important element to a converting website. All right. So, and I'm curious how, in your opinion, how important is design?
Yeah. So design matters, but if you think about the objective, we go back to the objectives of the website. The objectives of the website are to drive dollars. And if we're going to drive dollars, we need to drive conversions. And then we need to pull in the right type of traffic and convert them, right? And so design will play a role in that, but it's certainly not probably even the main role, which may be a little bit upsetting to people. This was proved to me about 4 or 5 years ago. And we had been working with this custom builder for about the same time. He's retiring now. We've worked with him for, I think, 11 years or so. And his site, when we took it over, so ugly, so ugly. It looked awful. It had already been built a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to redesign it. He's like, we just need to improve it. Like, okay. So we were tasked with driving the traffic and converting the leads. We got him so that he was booked out for 2 years and he was just like solid book. And that was the thing that kind of unlocked it for me and said, okay, design matters to a point, but at the end of the day, if you can even overcome that with enormous amount of traffic and lead conversion, I mean, we covered all the topics. He dominated his market for every keyword related to what he did, or even like we were covering hiking trails, activities in the area, like you name it. And he was owning the content and the site still looked ugly, but you know what? He had floor plans. He had a process page. He had a way to like semi-custom, like all this stuff, and people would come and they would fill out forms. And so design, I don't think that's the right way to do it. I'm just using it to prove the example. I think design should represent your brand. It should showcase, if you had your ideal client come to the site, you should be able to say, like, would this person feel like they're in the right place? Mm. Are they looking at photos of projects that match the type of projects they want to do? If you're high-end, does it feel high-end? If you're replacement, does it feel that? You know, like, whatever you are, it should check those boxes. And then after that, it's all performance. And performance is quantity and quality of traffic, and then how well do you convert that traffic into leads?
Damn. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, look at other high-end brands. Right? Look at BMW, look at Mercedes, you know, Porsche. You go to their website, it matches the product. Mm-hmm. The visuals match the product. Right? And so it'd be like if you're a remodeler and the client says to you, I want you to remodel my kitchen, but you need to keep the 1970s ugly lime green cabinets.
Yes.
You know, it's not going to be the full package. And so,
And yeah, to build on your analogy there, sorry to cut you off, but I think the other part of it too is if you ask somebody if they're redoing their kitchen and you're and they're like, we just want it to be beautiful. We just want it to be gorgeous. But like, you can't work in the kitchen. Like when you open one drawer, it bumps into another drawer. You can't open the fridge. Like performance isn't there. The layout is wrong. The design doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's not just one thing. It's not just the design, right? Or the visuals.
Yeah. I feel like the design is, let's check these boxes. That's table stakes. It's got to match your brand. It's got to look good. It has to be mobile responsive. It has to be easy to navigate. Like those are table stakes. Check those boxes. Now it's just preference. Do you like it? Do I like it? Does my team like it? All that actually doesn't matter. Does your customer like it? Even that may not matter. Does your customer, can they get the information? Can they navigate it easily? That matters a lot more. And then do they see what they're looking for in the service that they're desiring? And then if it checks those boxes, then performance.
I want to piggyback on the story of that builder you told too, where he had the crappy website. How long was he in business when you met him?
Forever. Long time. Yeah. I mean, probably 20 years.
So before. He had on his side working for him, the strength of his experience and brand in that community. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So had he been a new guy starting, there's no way he would have had that success with a shitty looking website. You know,
I would guess no.
Because if I refer somebody or you refer somebody to me for my kitchen right now, I'm probably just calling the number. I might not even go to their website. I might just go, hey, Spencer gave me your number. He says you're the guy to hire. That's probably how this guy was getting a lot of his work. And so, you know, especially for the guys that really don't have an established brand right now, I think it's the design and visuals are a little more important. So is my whole point there. But
yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Well, dude, I love chatting with you because I like geek. I know enough about marketing to be dangerous and hold somewhat of a conversation, but you're like the grand wizard over there. And I love picking your brain on this stuff. And I'm excited for our attendees at Mile High to be able to hang out with you and pick your brain. And you've been doing this a long time. And I've loved watching you guys eat your own cooking too. I mean, I've seen you niche down over the years and really go, this is who we serve. And, you know, yeah, we could do it all, but this is our sweet spot. And this is who we can most help. If somebody wants to learn more about you, where do you want them to go?
I mean, honestly, just builderfunnel.com. And if you Google my name and Builder Funnel, you'll find tons and tons of content. I mean, just check it out. Like go wherever you feel like you're struggling. We probably got a video on it, a podcast on it. You can obviously go to our contact form and hit us up and we'd love to see if it's a fit, see if we can help. But yeah, I appreciate you saying that, Tom, because I think one of the best things I can tell people is watch what we're doing and then you can take some of that and apply it to your business. Watch how we're marketing ourselves, how we positioned ourselves. Because we do want to be kind of the best example to our clients. I don't want to be that company that's like, oh, well, you need to do all these things. And then we're like doing none of that. And it's like, well, why? You're the marketer. Why aren't you doing that for yourselves? And so we try to do all of that at a really high level. And obviously we have lots of things we want to improve in and the bar is high, but we try to push them.
I'm laughing because I get hit up all the time from these people that are like, explode your social media. And then I'll go to their Instagram and they got like 18 followers.
Yep.
I'm like, come on, man. So anyway, well, dude, it's always good catching up. I think we're about 44 days away from Mile High kicking off, give or take at the time of this recording. And I look forward to hanging with you there. Guys, get to Mile High, go to milehighprofitsummit.com. And when you're there, have a conversation with Spencer and his team. They know what they're doing, guys. I promise you that. And I don't bring any sponsors in that don't know what they're doing. They're not at the top of their game. So dude, I appreciate you, man.
And, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm excited for the show. And looking forward to meeting everybody there.
You got it, man. Guys, milehighprofitsummit.com. And if you want to check out Spencer beforehand, builderfunnel.com. And you guys rock. We got to roll. We are out.